This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run on BFM 89.9, the business station. I'm Melissa Idris with Ibrahim Sani and Sharad Kutan. It's 7:36 on Thursday, the 16th of June. Ibrahim, what news do we have lined up for us today all the way till 8 o'clock?
So we got Saudi Aramco sneaking their look into Rapid Project. That's the first time you're hearing it. Some Brexit impact on the Malaysian PLCs and Hayes and how it's going to affect our business.
Okay, but first let's start off in China where Didi Chuxing has raised $4.5 billion in a round of funding that values this startup at close to $28 billion. So Didi Chuxing is China's leading ride-sharing company. It's technically Uber's biggest competition there.
Yeah, and of course, Uber's biggest competition around the world as well in terms of funding. You know, just a few days ago, Didi said that they'll raise more than Uber's Saudi investment of $3.5 billion. And this morning, we know that they have raised about $4.5 billion. So actually, they put their money where their mouth is.
In businesses like ride-sharing, is there a kind of first-mover advantage? Does it really matter that you were there first in China? Is a rival to Uber going to be able to make as much impact?
Yeah, it's not just for ride-sharing. Anything with a disruptive capability like Uber, like Lyft, like Didi Chuxing, as long as you execute it extremely well, that's fine. The problem's always been on execution. For instance, Uber, they can't execute their business clearly in China the way Didi Chuxing does, and because of that, Didi Chuxing does have an edge over Uber in China.
And that's why Apple has invested in Didi Chuxing as well. Yesterday, we reported that Uber was planning to raise even more money despite having a whole load of firepower in their bank account already, but they want to turn to debt markets and raise even more money there because they want to expand aggressively around the world. But yet, they're spending $1 billion in China. It still can't beat Didi Chuxing, which is, after all that fundraising that you mentioned, Ibrahim, now is the world's third largest privately backed young company. They've even surpassed Airbnb.
Yep, so they've surpassed Airbnb, they've surpassed Snapchat and a bunch of other companies. They are third only behind Uber and Xiaomi. I think with this fundraising capabilities, they are well on their way on raising more funds going forward.
But I don't know. I mean, do you think Can fight not with Uber for the rest of the world is still up for grabs, right? You know, China is one market, but what about the rest of the world? Can Didi Chuxing fight Uber for world domination, or do they have to team up with, you know, the Avengers?
Would they even do well in Malaysia, for instance? I mean, here we have Uber and Grab really dominating the market, and perhaps here Grab more than Uber. But and what would they bring if they entered this market? What would they have to do differently in order to grab market share?
So, okay, Uber is... So we're talking about the geographical capabilities or competitiveness that they have, but this is something that we can underline on the fact that Uber is truly a multinational startup. They are in various markets. They are either first or second in various markets, but other competitions are focused respectively on their home markets. So, Sharad, you're mentioning Grab. Yeah, they're only big in Malaysia and Singapore, and... Melissa, you're right. Didi Chuxing is big in China. But all these markets, they're rather huge. We're talking about 10, 20 million ready customers that are ready to take on these ride-share companies. But Uber has, that competitive advantage in many of these companies, in many of these markets. So they are truly poised to triumph over the others.
Unless Didi Chuxing ties up with Lyft, ties up with GrabCar, ties up with other ride-sharing apps, which is what they're trying to do. They are trying to tie up with all these other market leaders to give Uber a genuine run for their money.
That's right.
7:40 right now, moving on to other stories. Indonesian officials are not expecting a repeat of the forest fires that caused the suffocating haze last year. But this may be due to favorable weather rather than progress in the underlying causes of the haze.
Yeah, which is companies just burning their the peat forests, and trying to get rid of their crops. But there is a connecting news to this. Felda Global Ventures yesterday announced that they expect an earnings turnaround for the second quarter this year. The FGV president and CEO, Dato' Zakaria Arshad, said he is bullish about FGV's recovery. And this is despite the ongoing discussions to buy that PT Eagle High plantation in Indonesia. Of course, what percentage of FGV's plantation acreage is in Indonesia? It turns out their Indonesian percentage is extremely quite small, about 8% only of FGV's holding in Indonesia.
Okay, and since we're talking about the palm oil industry, I also read that I think we're looking at increasing the palm oil export tax to 6% next month.
Yep, this is an increase from 5.5%, and this is the second tax rate increase this year. It was 5% in May, it is 5.5% now in June, and it's going to be 6% in July. Of course, the MPOB, or the Malaysian Palm Oil Board circular, confirmed this tax rise. They have calculated a reference price of about 2,730 ringgit per ton for that month, for next month. So any price above the 2,250 mark triggers this tax.
Okay.
So is this going to affect the desirability of Malaysian palm oil?
Yeah, I guess so.
It's raised prices, right? The palm oil.
Because of the slightly increased prices to 2,700 ringgit per ton. But also, this is about sustainability, right? I mean, haze is a perennial problem in this region. And I think that the bigger, larger issue right now is whether or not Indonesia is willing to step up that game on curbing haze.
Isn't it coming up to, haze season? Every year we have haze season. It should be coming up. And we've also read reports that Singapore might want to penalize us, yep, Indonesian companies for their role in causing the hate.
Right.
It's transboundary, of course.
Right. Just coming back to the question of taxation, right? So you're saying that the export tax is going to be raised. I mean, what impact is it going to have on, our sales of palm oil internationally?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to affect everything because there's also production problems. And with the haze in process, it's going to affect the way the yield is going to be reaped over the next few months. But the problem with the haze is that there is an interesting dichotomy of what Indonesia is trying to do. There is an acknowledgement that Indonesia is prepared to accept the fact that they are the main culprit in causing the haze. But they are not prepared to accept other nations to come in and solve the problem together with them. Because Indonesia believes that this is a sovereignty issue more than a haze issue. But the thing I want to highlight here is that haze has no respect for boundary laws and border issues. Haze will go into your house,
okay,
no matter
so,
what.
So when we talk about Indonesia, right, should we make the distinction between the Indonesian government and Indonesian companies responsible for the haze? Because when we say Indonesia, it's a blanket statement. Indonesia is responsible. But do you go after the companies involved in the private sector and take them to the court of law? Or do you talk to the government and say, well, if you're not going to punish, we're going to go straight for the bad guys?
Well, clearly it's going to have to be all stakeholders, including governments in the region and companies involved. And of course, the public, stakeholders in this, because the health implications,
yeah,
right? And we've already had, many rounds of meetings, ministerial level meetings about this, a mechanism. So governments are there. I mean, they have to play a role as regulator and such, right?
You sound Enforcer. Very skeptical that anything will get done.
Well, it's been 20 years of the haze problem, right? And so, again, it's a barometer of how ASEAN works as an intergovernmental organization. Can it, in fact, deliver?
Malaysia and Singapore, Malaysia and Indonesia collectively produce about 90% of the world's CPO. And the
CPO
only,
being?
Crude palm oil. But there's only the dichotomy here is that there's only a little amount of small players here, a small amount of big players in Malaysia. But in Indonesia, there's over 20 companies responsible for, for causing the haze. Indonesia, in fact, has named up to 23 companies responsible for the haze. One of them, we've had them on the grill, Asia Pulp and Paper, where I was, understandably quite frustrated with this notion of why is it that companies like Asia Pulp and Paper, Sinar Mas, Bumi Mekah Hijau, Mega Alam Sentosa, or MAS, they are all directly responsible for the haze, and they can get away with it year after year for the past two decades. And from the answer that I got from Asia Pulp and Paper in that breakfast grill was that the law allows it. The law really allows it.
They weren't technically breaking any laws.
Yeah, they weren't technically breaking. Okay, so yes.
I believe they were found not guilty, right, in the court?
They were not found guilty because, again, no laws were broken. And they do allow for these small-time players, not just these big, you know, fancy companies with multi-million dollar holdings left and right. These small farm holders, they can actually burn the crop because the law actually allows them so.
So there's a loophole, and those holes have not been tightened or
and
closed.
And it's very difficult to close it because the law is difficult to change in the ex-Dutch system, law system.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.